Session number 10181.
Mr. Williams, reel 4. So there was no water at Brunetti to clean wounds?
No, no. There was no organisation to bring water as such either. The only water we had was what we, the bottles, the little bottles we had that went into battle with. There was no organisation to bring water up, no water carts, no system of clean water, nothing.
You said that the Americans at Brunetti were under fire for 3 days.
For 3 solid days, first of all, but they were under fire totally altogether in the Battle of Brunetti for 1 whole month. But the main phase of the battle was 3 days, 3 to 4 days.
Did they make much of an advance?
Yes, yes, we took Brunetti. We took the village of Brunetti, but then suddenly it was stopped, and then it was dig in at Brunetti. And then there was the counterattack came then after about 4 or 5 days. And then it was really trench warfare then from then on, that particular battle.
What kind of troops counterattacked?
More Spanish troops, but there was a lot of Moors as well. There was a lot of Moorish troops as well. Because remember, the Washington Battalion done one afternoon, they'd done a little advance, and they captured some Moorish prisoners. They captured some prisoners who were Moors, and they captured a few Spaniards as well.
Did you see the enemy prisoners?
Yes, I saw them, yes, yes, yes.
How were they treated?
They were treated as normal prisoners, but a prisoner is a prisoner, and he's always very frightened. He doesn't know what's going to happen to him. But there was no harm, and they were taken back and from where I saw them. I don't know what happened after that. I mean, I can only tell of the incidents in front of them. Where I was or what happened with them then. But when they went back, I have no idea. I should imagine they were quite normal and went back.
Would enemy prisoners get the same medical treatment as...
Yes, 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 yes. Yes, exactly, exactly. No difference. No difference whatsoever.
Did you treat any of them?
I can only remember ever treating one, only one, and that was a burnt man, incidentally, a burnt man.
At Brunetti?
No, he was treated at Belchite. He was only German prisoner, not German... a Spanish prisoner I've ever treated was at Belchite.
And were you with the American troops at Brunetti for the whole month?
For the whole battle of Brunetti, yeah, for that whole offensive. Yeah, Madrid offensive.
What happened to you after Brunetti?
Well, after Brunetti, I had a little wound. I had a bullet wound in my leg. It was only a spent bullet, a little hole in my leg, hardly any damage. And I went back to hospital in Madrid for 3 or 4 days. And then I came from the hospital, and by that time the battalion had come out of the line, and I went back to the battalion.
Where were they pulled out to?
To a place called Tarazona. That was their headquarters, more or less, Tarazona.
What was their morale like after the battle?
Oh, the morale of the troops were very good, but very, very subdued. Everybody was recounting their experiences, what happened, was anybody seen so-and-so. I mean, what we have to remember about the Spanish Civil War, there was no organization, no records. It was a hit-and-miss affair. For example, lots of people dead down in the dressing station that I had. There was one place called Mosquito Hill. I had a little dressing station right at the bottom of the fighting was on top of this hill about, say, 100 yards ahead of me. And I had this little station at the bottom of the hill and a dried riverbed. And I had all the badly wounded all laid out. There must have been about 40 or 50 fellas, all badly wounded there laid out. And the cry was water. That was the cry of water. And they were dying. A lot of them were dying. Nowhere to bury them. Nowhere to bury them. Nobody to bury them. No identification tags, nobody had any identification marks, nothing at all. Nothing to identify who was who, you just had to go through his pockets, and even if you found anything, who did you report it to? Or you knew that somebody was dead, and his friend might have seen him get hurt or wounded, and that was, when we got back to Tarazona, everybody's asked, have you seen Joe, have you seen Jim, have you seen Fred? No, but the last I saw him, he was being carried down to the dressing station. Then they'd all come to ask me, what happened to him? Well, I don't know. The last I saw him, he was dying, and I left him, people to bury him. Where did you bury him? In the dried river bed. So people that were killed in that Madrid offensive, the British and the Americans, nobody knows where they are buried. Nobody knows who exactly was killed or where. All they know that when they returned back after the battle, there was 100 or 300 men missing, but nobody knew exactly where he was killed or where he is now, or who was killed.
How long were you out of the line at Tarazona?
Tarazona, July, August, September. We were out of the line, I would say, about a fortnight.
Before doing what?
Before we went back in to relieve other troops in the same front, the Madrid front. And then it was a spasmodic affair then. It was little attacks, little counterattacks, but there weren't no major battle. It was trench warfare. It was trench warfare for a while. No major battle. Little casualties, nothing deadly. And that went on then for months.
Were you in contact with home?
No, I was writing home, yes. I was writing home, little notes home, but everything was censored, of course. I was writing home, yes. I was periodically getting a letter from my mother, my sister, yes, yes. Oh, yes, we're in contact.
What was the attitude of your family to your having gone to Spain?
Wouldn't know what I was doing out there. Typical of me, they said. Typical of me.
So they didn't really approve?
They didn't approve, neither did they disapprove, you know. They were wishing I was home.
How long did this period of relative inactivity last then?
It lasted, there was trench warfare in and out of the line then from July to the Battle of Teruel, which was December. December 38.
Did you go to Teruel?
Battle of Teruel, yes.
Can you describe what happened and who you were with?
Yes, I was with the... By that time, the casualties in the George Washington Battalion and the Lincoln Battalion in the whole Madrid offensive had been really bad. So they amalgamated both battalions. So the Washington Battalion and the Lincoln Battalion became known as the Lincoln-Washington Battalion. So there was now only one American battalion. And I was with the Lincoln-Washington Battalion at the Battle of Teruel.
How did that amalgamation go? Did it go smoothly?
Oh, yes, it went very smoothly. I mean, it was neither here nor there because they were all Americans together. It seemed to be a great satisfaction to everybody if they were with their own countrymen. The Americans were together, the British were together, the Germans were together, the Italians were together. And they all had the different battalions, the Garibaldi Battalion, the Thielman Battalion, the Dimitrov Battalion, the Lincoln-Washington Battalion, the Canadians, they were on their own. They had the Mackenzie-Papineau Battalion, all had battalions there. And there was in the various battalions, there were sprinklings of Irishmen, Chinamen, Japanese, Australians. There was everywhere. In the English-speaking battalions, there was the Australians, New Zealanders, and things like that. In some of the other battalions, there was the Chinese. I always remember the two Chinese in the Garibaldi Battalion. I don't know what part of China they were from, or if they were from China at all, but they were Chinese.
They looked Chinese.
They were Chinese, yeah. They looked Chinese, yeah. They looked Chinese. But they may have been born in Soho, far as I was concerned.
You said they were with the Garibaldi?
They were with the Garibaldi Battalion, so they might have been Italian Chinese, you see.
Were there any people of different nationalities to the Americans, apart from yourself?
No, all Americans. But, you know, there was the Americans, Polish-American, naturalized American, but they were all different nationalities of America. Lots of Negroes. One of the battalion commanders of the Lincoln-Washington Battalion was an American. Was a Negro. I forget his name. He was a Negro. He was a battalion commander. He was a good fellow, too. He got killed.
Were there any outstanding personalities with the American battalion?
Yes, as far as I'm concerned, there was three or four outstanding personalities. There was a fellow called Steve Nelson. He was a battalion commissar, and he was a real charming, super fellow, Steve Nelson. And there was another fellow by the name of Ryan. He was an American, too. I think he was a company commander. I liked him. But Steve Nelson was a great man. I had a lot to do with Steve. He was a battalion commissar, and he was looking after the welfare of the troops. He'd bring cigarettes up. He'd ask. He'd always come make sure I had enough bandages and stuff like that. He'd always make sure that I was all right with my supplies.
What did you think of the working of the commissar system?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a great morale booster. The commissar was the go-between between the military world and the civilian world. I liked them. Everybody liked them. Everybody liked their attitude. Everybody liked their attitude.
Can we go on to the Battle of Teruel now, and can you describe to me in detail what you experienced of it?
Cold. The Battle of Teruel was, as far as I was concerned, was happening in the North Pole. It was a bitter winter. It was a bitter winter. And a Spanish winter, they can be very cold for a week. They were really bitter. I can always remember trying to handle things, and my hands were sticking to metal. Very, very cold. And frostbite was a major thing in that battle. Major, the Battle of Teruel. That was one of the worst battles, as far as I was concerned. Not for casualties as such, but it was a cruel battle. Cruel battle. The cold, the weather, and the quick night, the short days and the long nights, and the quickness of the day ending. The night seemed to come round plonk, and it was very, very cold there.
How did you treat frostbite?
Just best you could. Bandage him up, try to massage him, and bandage them up. No, you couldn't do much with frost. Get him back to the warm.
Did you have adequate clothing with the troops?
The thing was, by this time the war had been hanging on, and there was a siege mentality of the whole of Spain. Things were getting short. Food was getting short. Clothing was short. Now, in the Battle of Teruel, I didn't have a pair of leather shoes. I had a pair of rope sandals, sabatos they were called. All I had was a pair of rope sandals. And my feet was cold. I tell you, they were cold. I was wrapping them up in anything I could find. And lots of the troops only had rope sandals. And the Battle of Teruel, it started off as an offensive by the Republican government, but it ended up in a major route by the counteroffensive of Franco's forces.
What about fuel? Did you have that?
I mean, for heat?
Yes.
No fuel at all. You had fuel, what you could scrounge. You made your light your bonfires or things like that. You made your own fires. Scrounged olive trees. We burnt olive trees by the grove. Burnt olive trees, and they burnt beautifully too. Cut olive tree down after olive tree down, and they kept us warm. But people in the trenches and really in the front line, I don't know how they poor dabs managed. No idea. I was in Teruel, in the Battle of Teruel, there's a little village there, I forget what it was called. It was a major battle there, a lot of casualties there. And I had my first aid post just about 200 yards from where the front line was, and a railway tunnel. And it was cold in this railway tunnel, but it was reasonably safe from the bombing and the shelling. But the big draft wind going through this tunnel, it was cold, but it was safe. And that's my memory of Christmas Day in the Battle of Teruel, 1987. That's right, Christmas Day.
1937.
1937, the Battle of Teruel in a tunnel there in the snow. Cold.
Do you think the enemy suffered from the cold as much as you did?
Yes, yes. I think they were better equipped. I think they were better organised. They'd highly disciplined. There were a lot of Italian troops at the Battle of Teruel. The Italian army was there. And the Battle of Guadalajara, well, they were the Italian army. There were a lot of Italian troops at Teruel.
How long were you personally at Teruel?
I was at Teruel for 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
Always with the American troops?
Always with the Lincoln Washington Battalion. 3 weeks to a month.
What happened to you afterwards?
Well, we came out from that. There was chaos after that. Lots of casualties everywhere. Franco took a lot of prisoners. We got lost. I got lost in the Battle of Teruel. We were cut off. really cut off there for 2 or 3 days. We didn't know where we were. And I was with half a dozen Americans trying to find our way back. We eventually found our way back, but more luck than chance. But we didn't know where we were, really cut off.
How did you come to be cut off?
Well, the enemy surrounded us. They broke through and surrounded us. And it was chaos, absolute chaos. Nobody knew where the front line was. And I was with this bunch of Americans. And we holed up in a place for a couple of days. And we moved at night. I always remember moving at night, quietly at night, thinking we were going in the right direction. And we had an American with us, I forget his name, but he was a good fella. He knew his way about, he knew what he was up to. And he led us out of it. And we eventually got back after about 5 days, through the enemy lines.
What happened to you after Teruel?
Well, then we went then to up to Catalonia. Up to Catalonia, around a place called Calpe and Caspe and various places up there. And then we were resting up there, and new volunteers were coming and regrouping. And we were there then from, now this is where time vanishes with me completely. We were there for quite a while anyway. And the next big action we had from there was the crossing of the Ebro. That was a major action, the crossing of the River Ebro. I was with the British Battalion.
Which particular individuals were you associating with in the British Battalion?
With the battalion as a whole. I was the first aid man with the British Battalion. I knew lots of people, lots of names that associated, lost my memory. Tom Wintringham, was it? No, he was. Yeah, I remember him there. I don't know whether he was at the there. No, he wasn't out there then. I knew lots of Welshmen there. I knew a fellow called Tom Jones. He was killed. A fellow from Liverpool. Harry Proctor. You know, he was a very nice fellow, Harry Proctor. He was killed with a shrapnel wound in his head.
And again, you were doing your medical orderly work?
All the time. I was the medical man for the battalion. All the medical man for the battalion.
Can you describe what the crossing of the Ebro was like?
Yes. We'd been training for weeks and weeks, having boats, we were having boats crossing the river and crossing at night and training to cross the Ebro. And the actual crossing of the Ebro was totally uneventful. It was the end of the summer. It was, and the Ebro wasn't running in spate. It was not much of a stream there. It was wide, but not deep. So we crossed very, very easily. It would be the other side, and we crossed into enemy territory. I should say about 10, 50 miles before we met any real opposition. And then it started.
What time of day did you actually cross the river?
I crossed the river about just breaking dawn. I would say about 4 o'clock, perhaps 4 in the morning.
How long did it take you to get across?
An hour. Well, to cross the Ebro, I would say about 10 minutes, but, you know, to be well clear of it, about an hour.
And were you rowing?
No, waded across. The part that we waded across, and it was. You could up to your knees. It wasn't, as I say, it's a wide river, but it wasn't. It was at the end of the summer, so it was pretty dry. I should imagine further down where it was narrow, it must have been a problem. But where we crossed, it was, they could more or less, they built bridges, but there was no problem to build bridges across. There was more or less planks of wood pushing across. It was quite straightforward crossing the Ebro, where I was.
Was there much equipment to take across?
No. I'll tell you, during the Battle of the Ebro, I only saw one tank on the Republican side. One tank. All I saw. In the Battle of Brunette, I saw quite a few tanks. Battle of Teruel, I saw a few tanks. But at the Ebro, I only saw one tank. And after crossing the Ebro, I never saw another Republican tank. They were there somewhere, but I never saw them.
What about lorries? Were there many lorries?
Yes, quite a few camions, lorries, quite a few lorries. Yes, lorries, yeah, lorries were there in great profusion lorries, yeah.
And they were driven across the Ebro?
Driven across the Ebro, splashed across, a lot of them did. And I think they bulldozed a lot of mud and rocks and things in parts of it, and made little bridges. They didn't have, there was no problem anyway to cross it. Not where I was. No problem.
Which units, apart from the British battalion, were crossing the Ebro at the same time?
Practically the whole of the Spanish army. Except for the reserve they had, but the whole of the Spanish army. That was their last major offensive.
So tens of thousands of
men? Sorry, tens of thousands of men.
Can you describe what the first serious opposition was like, as far as you remember it?
Easy, no problem at all. Because, funny enough, that's the first time I've seen the Republican aircraft was very efficient. They kept the... They caught Franco off guard or whatever it was, but the Republican aircraft kept the aircraft away for quite a few days, and that was a major thing. And it was quite a while before serious battles took place. I don't think there was any serious lines at the Battle of the Ebro. If you followed the war, you found that the Franco advanced to the Battle of the Ebro, but he had no time to consolidate at the banks of the Ebro. The counteroffensive by the Republic was too quick for him to have any effect there. But the crossing of the Ebro wasn't very difficult. But after about 15 miles inland, it then became really difficult. It came to the hilly country, the Sierras, the really hilly country.
Was it trench warfare?
No, it wasn't trench warfare as such. Now, strange as it may seem, trench warfare seemed to have ended at Teruel and Brunete. No, it wasn't. It was open warfare and little foxholes. No stationary warfare. It was movement all the time.
Had the caliber of the enemy changed by this time?
Yes, he had. He seemed to be bombing from the air all day. All day, we never let up from the bombing, and that was the worst part of it. And the artillery was shelling all the time. He had much more equipment. His artillery aircraft was overwhelming. All that the Republicans had was a few aircraft, and nothing in comparison.
What was the character of the casualties you were treating now?
Well, the first few days of the Ebro, very few casualties, strange as it may seem. The casualty only started coming on in the Ebro when things became stationary, when the foxholes, digging in foxholes, and gradually moving little bit by bit. And the main casualties of the Battle of the Ebro was a place called Belchite. There was a big town there where the Republicans took, but they lost it within a matter of a few hours. And that was the big casualty, the Battle of the Ebro, the crossing of the Ebro.
Did you have any more help with you for the medical side?
No, not at all. Always on my own, forever on my own. I had, when I was with the British Battalion, I'd have somebody come and help me, possibly one of the fellows come down, or he wasn't very well, and I said, well, okay, you can help me, or things like that. But I was sole man in charge of the bandages. I was the sole person putting tourniquets on. I was the sole person giving morphia. I was the sole person that was instructing them to be buried. I never saw a doctor in the front line. And I think I only saw a doctor two or three times. And that is when, for some reason, I went back for supplies to brigade headquarters.
Did you think at this time that Spain was lost?
No. Only time we knew when Spain was lost when some of the other we had an English newspaper. No. You didn't know. Warfare is a strange thing, as far as I was concerned, as far as the group as I was concerned. You only knew your little world. You only knew what you were in. All you knew that you were there. You were being shot at. You were frightening, and you wanted to get out of it. But you didn't know how to get out of it. You were stuck with it.
What was the attitude of you towards the enemy? Did you hate them or what?
I didn't hate them as such. All I knew, he was throwing lots of stuff at me. He was trying to kill me. And I tried to avoid being killed. No, I didn't hate them at all. All I knew was somebody there trying to kill me as such, and anybody trying to kill me wasn't a very nice person as far as I was concerned. No, I don't think in a warfare like that there's any such thing as a personal hate. Nobody knows the man has thrown a half hundredweight shell at him. They don't know what he looks like or anything. All they know is a very shell coming at him and somebody's thrown it. But it's an impersonal thing, completely impersonal. You don't hate the pilot and the aircraft. You only hate the ready aircraft and the bombs.
But in a battle like this, was there not an ideological component, feeling that?
I think there's a slight ideological component. I mean, but you must remember that the people in charge of the battle, the people in charge of the troops, they will instill or they will try to get an ideological content into the thing. For reasons of their own, or perhaps they think that might do you good. But I don't think that comes into anything in a battle or on the battlefront. Ideology is goes out of the ruddy window at the battlefront, at the point of battle. At the point of battle. Those in front cry back, those behind cry forward, and that's exactly what it's like. No ideology at the battle. And the hero is as frightened as the coward. And I don't know what the difference is. I do not know what the difference is. I don't know what the difference is.
Speaking about the fighting in Spain
Yes.
generally, did you see acts of heroism?
Oh, yes. Every day of my life, every day I was there, I saw some amazing feats. I saw some amazing feats. I saw some, I don't know whether you will call it ever high, but I saw people in great jeopardy trying to do a good turn to somebody else. Saw that dozens and dozens of times. And I remember one incident in Brunete. We were short of water, no water. I could have done anything for a cupful of water for some of the fellas. And there was a little valley, and across this little valley there was a pipeline, a 2-inch pipe was running across the valley. The valley was about, I say, about 30 yards, and it was exposed. This pipe, it was running from one end of the across the riverbed, actually, one there, and then it was running across there. And bullets or something had hit this pipe, and there was water leaking out of this pipe. So somebody said to me, one of the fellows said, "There's a pipe across there, further up around the corner, and it's leaking water." So I said, "Well, that part is under fire." I said, "That's dangerous. Why nobody's going for it?" Well, he said, "Look at all these fellas there. They want water, crying for water." So I said, "Well, don't you go for water. You'll get killed." I said, "This, that the place is covered." He wouldn't listen. He just wouldn't listen. And he went, and he got killed.
Did you know who he was?
Yes, a little Scotsman.